How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You want to just talk for me?
Say a sentence. What do you want me to... What do you want me to talk about?
Say whatever you like.
Fred Katz is the single worst human being I've ever encountered in my 25 years on this planet.
All right, there we go.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locking in for episode 170 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com. Friday episode today, as always, I'm on every day of the week. I figure people probably care about this one a little bit more, especially those of you who are active on Twitter, because you might see that I am having on my real life and my cyber bully to try to confront him in person for this episode. Having Josh Eustis, small forward for the Thunder. We recorded this one on Wednesday afternoon. I'm running it now. We recorded this in the practice facility. Going to get to it in one sec. Before we do, though, I do have to read off, because for those of you who don't know, Josh comes at me on Twitter a lot, and it gets referenced a decent amount during our podcast, and I can't expect all of you to be on Twitter. I don't know why you'd follow Josh anyway, but I can't expect all of you to be on Twitter, but I will let you know Josh is responsible for some of these following that he thinks are gems. There's the time he tweeted, "Roses are red, violets are blue, I'm unfollowing at Fred Katz, and you all should too." There was the time he tweeted at me, "Delete your account." There was the time he tweeted out a screenshot of him just going to block my account, but he didn't actually do it, and then followed it up with a tweet, "Don't worry, I didn't block Fred Katz today, I can't let his Twitter awfulness go unchecked." There was a time I tweeted out one of his blog posts when he first started up his blog, and he responded to me tweeting it out by, "I figured if you could do it, anyone could." There was a time he tweeted out a photo of a trash can and said that he ran into my writing skills. There was a time he tweeted the photo of me at the FBI and said, "This is an up-to-date picture of Fred Katz." You can go to Josh's timeline on Twitter. You can see all of these. I don't need to keep reading them out. You got the idea of it. Let's just get straight to the conversation. Josh and I spoke for a while. We talked about Twitter. We also got into more serious stuff. We talked about the team. We got some Enes Kanter stories, got some Steven Adams eating stories, got some Russell Westbrook stories. Talked about him coming up through the team, coming up through the D League. He had kind of an unconventional path to the NBA with the contract deal that he made with the Thunder when he was drafted, going straight to the D League. First player to basically have a domestic draft and stash. We talked about that. So a lot of different conversation, 50 minutes. Enjoy.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I'm here with, and I say this from truly the bottom of my heart, one of the worst people I've ever known, like ever known, Thunder forward and forward thinker, Josh Eustis.
The feeling is mutual. I can't stress that enough, how mutual it really is.
How happy are you that I cover this team right now? That's my first tough question.
Happy?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know. In one way, like, I wish you were just gone completely. But in another, it's like, okay, Superman needs, you know, Lex Luthor.
No one's ever called me Superman before.
Okay, well, that's because you're Lex Luthor in this situation. You're the Joker to my Batman. You know, like, obviously. They need each other. There needs to be that balance, the good and the evil.
You ever going to grow the fro back out?
The fro? No. Can't do it, man.
You kind of had it this summer.
Kind of. I thought it looked good in college, and I look back at those pictures, and I'm just in shock at how bad it really did look. Like, it was mostly out of just laziness and not wanting to go to the barber, but, yeah, it can't come back now.
It was massive.
It was, it took on, like, a life of its own. Like, it just, especially with, like, the history of afros at Stanford, you know, the Josh Childresses.
Well, that was actually going to be my first question. My first question is, how many times in your life have you been confused with Josh Childress? Josh with the fro from Stanford.
I wouldn't say confused, but more like compared to, like, a lot of people, like, would look at me and be like, oh, you're like Josh Childress, or, oh, like, you remind me of Josh Childress, like, oh, it must be a Stanford thing, something like that. I got that all the time.
Yeah,
all the time.
You weren't that different as, like, player style.
Yeah, I mean, Josh was crazy talented in college. I mean, he's still a really good player, like, great guy, too. But, yeah, he kind of made the fro famous in, as far as, like, college basketball goes, like, the modern afro. And he still got it. That's the crazy thing. Like, I saw him last year, and he still got it.
Did everyone at Stanford hate you, too? I assume everybody hated you.
No, I was pretty well liked, I'd like to say, but you know, maybe I just can't read.
They didn't know you.
Can't read.
Exactly. They got to know you.
Exactly.
Once they got to know you, I'm sure they'd feel differently.
Well, you know, it's just, I think honestly, it's just you. I think you bring out this aggression and this hostility out of me.
So, there's an article mm-hmm. on Fansided, mm-hmm. a real article.
Oh yeah.
About what an ass you are on Twitter.
I don't think that was the point of the article.
I'm pretty sure that was the point of the article.
That's not what I got from it.
I'm pretty sure that was the point of the
what
article.
What I got from it was I was like the people's champ. Like I was taking down this symbol of evil, you know, the war of words.
I'm not convinced that's what it was.
I'm almost positive that's what it was.
All right, so I have questions
okay,
written
yeah.
down.
Mm-hmm.
My first one. Is I'm starting off with a tough one.
Okay.
Do you think you're the only NBA player who asked his parents for a food processor for his birthday?
I'd be willing to bet that. I forgot I told you that. Yeah. Oh, man.
Now a lot of people know.
Disclaimer on that. I like to cook.
Don't tell reporters things you don't want the public to find out, because I'm unleashing all of your secrets.
This just goes to the whole, like, how bad of a person you are. Like,
yeah, no, I'm unleashing all of your secrets.
He thinks I said in passing are all of a sudden coming back at me.
Yeah, no, it's not coming out. I've just been studying you for a year, and that's all it is.
I'm an interesting topic, for sure. Disclaimer to everybody out there. I like to cook, and... so I wanted the food processor to make that easier on me because I was just tired of using a blender to do it because it's not efficient at all. And the food processor, actually, I would be willing to say it was one of my favorite things I got. It's awesome.
Did you get the cappuccino machine, too?
I didn't, man.
But you want a cappuccino machine.
Yeah, I do. I wanted one of those. And the main reason I didn't get it... is that my fiance said that we don't have any counter space for it, so it's on her. Part of me just wants to get one and just put it up there and deal with the consequences later, but I'm a little worried.
So there's a there's an incredible cappuccino machine in the mm-hmm. media room in Chicago.
What is it like an actual like big like it's a grinder on it and everything?
It's not. It's one of those, like, versatile... It's basically the Russell Westbrook of cappuccino machines. It's, like, one of those, like, versatile, like... You can actually get any kind of hot drink out of it.
Really?
Yeah, so it gives you... You get hot water for your tea. Uh-huh. You get hot chocolate. You get cappuccino. You can get a latte. You can get, like, three different kind of roasts uh-huh. of coffee.
Wow.
It's great. So that's incredible. I told an undisclosed Thunder staffer that... you know, if you guys don't get a coffee machine mm-hmm. of that quality in Oklahoma City, you're going to start – you might lose me to Chicago. And this undisclosed Thunder staffer responded, you don't think that's exactly what I want? And then started cackling.
See, it's not just me that feels this way about you. But now that I know that that's in Chicago, like I might start to, you know,
players never come in the media room.
Yeah, but why can't we have... So, Boris Diaw, for instance. The rumor is he has a cappuccino machine in his locker, and he takes it with him and everything like that. And I'm just saying, like, why not? Why can't we have a kitchen?
Boris Diaw said on Zach Lowe's podcast that when he was traded to Utah, mm-hmm. when he got to the arena, first thing he did when he came in the locker room was he checked to see if there was an outlet in his locker so that he could put a cappuccino machine in there.
It's priorities, man. He's got it right.
Boris Diaw is the most fascinating man in the NBA.
It's incredible.
He's an incredible human being. He said this on Zach Lowe's podcast. He has two Siberian Huskies, and he walks them while on a Segway, which must be...
Interesting. A sight.
Which must be a sight. This, like, 7-foot man on a Segway with two Siberian Huskies running along either side of him.
Right. I can't even, like, picture that in my head, what that would look like.
It's got to be great in Utah with the snow background.
For sure.
Yeah. It's got to be fantastic.
Wow. It's just the most modern thing ever. They're just riding a Segway.
Yeah, except Segways are blowing up now.
Are they?
Or maybe it's hoverboards.
Well, hoverboards, now that they, like, are exploding on airplanes and stuff.
Right,
I think
that's
that kind of fell
that's
off. But, like, the Segway, you know, interesting fact, the creator of Segway, you know how he died?
On a Segway.
He drove his Segway, he rode it off the edge of a cliff.
I think you told me that.
Did I tell you that? Yeah.
Someone told me that. I can't imagine.
It's incredible. This is the irony.
Tell me that.
Sad, but the irony behind that is incredible.
Well, we got to get you on a Segway then.
Anything to get away from you.
Okay, so you claim to be a foodie. Who's the best cook on the team? Anybody else cook?
You know, not a lot of
guys. Steven cook?
That's an awful question.
But
does
Steven
look like he cooks?
No, he doesn't, but I've heard Steven talk about food.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Steven loves food, and mm-hmm. Steven eats like a maniac.
No, yeah.
The Steven eating stories are insane.
No, they're incredible.
So I figure if you love food that much, it's not insane that you would learn how to cook.
No, definitely. I don't think Steven cooks. I think Steven cooks like he chases animals down, attacks them, picks the meat off the bone raw. Like that's probably the extent Steven goes for cooking. But
one of my favorite moments of the year was just hearing Steven talk about bone-in ribeyes.
Yeah.
Just rant about how bone-in ribeye has to be cooked a particular way.
Yeah, you should ask him about New Zealand lamb.
Okay.
About New Zealand lamb. He loves lamb, but he refuses to order it. If it did not come from New Zealand, he refuses to order it.
Why not?
Just standards. He's pride in his lamb from his country, and he picks it up, you know, by the bone and everything, and just picks it up by the bone and chomps down. No silverware necessary.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
the eating stories mm-hmm. are unbelievable with him.
Yeah, it's incredible
how much he eats. That he sits down and has like two appetizers, two mains.
Oh yeah,
like and like that's small. Yeah. And then from what I've heard, he worries about other people. Mm-hmm. If he'll go to dinner with someone who just gets like an appetizer, a main course, maybe dessert, and he'll be like, why didn't you eat?
Yeah, it's like Steven.
He holds other people to
that. That was a full meal. Like we were in, in Toronto, and we went out and had like a team dinner at this Italian place. And they brought out a bunch of appetizers, and he ate all those, and he had bread. And then his entrees, he got two whole bone-in fish, like whole cooked fish they brought out to him, and they accidentally cut the heads off before they brought it to him, so the heads weren't on it, and he specifically asked that any heads that they weren't using on other cooked fish to bring him those heads, and they brought out two separate fish heads.
That's amazing.
For him to have.
That is hilarious.
He's a maniac.
That is so funny. He's so funny. Like the eating stories I've heard about that guy. Apparently at his Mike Malone told this story when Mike Malone was the coach of the Kings. Do you know this one?
I don't know. If
his draft workout for the Kings in like 2013. They had food for the guys after. And when he sat down, he had like apparently two appetizers. He had two steaks. And then after Mike Malone said it's the most he's ever seen somebody eat. He was still hungry and asked, but they didn't have food left. So he just got a loaf of bread and started eating it with a fork and knife as if it were a steak. He's sitting there at his draft workout eating like a loaf of bread after having
And nobody else would even think that that's an option.
Right.
Like, if your option was a loaf of bread, you socially...
Right, except for, like, Aladdin. Like,
exactly. You'd be like, you know what, no, like, I'm not going to just eat a loaf
especially, like, a draft workout.
Right.
When you're, like...
Trying to impress.
Right, and it's funny, because Steven's, like, so professional.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, he's definitely one of the most, like, business-as-usual guys on this team.
For sure.
I would say, right?
Yeah.
And so, like... The fact that food overrides that for him,
mm-hmm.
like, that's the one scenario where he's like, I don't care, I
just
food.
All instinct.
And look, I'm sure, like, he's a very impressive guy. I'm sure he killed his interview. I'm sure he killed his workout. And, like, obviously Malone obviously thought it was awesome.
Right.
It was, like, it was incredible. I loved it. But it's like, man, it was so funny.
He's just different, man. I've never met anybody like him before.
So no one else cooks?
I think some people cook, but I really don't think that anyone would cook as often as I do. Like, I genuinely enjoy
cooking. What's the best thing you make? I'm sure it's terrible.
So I'm really good at making steaks. I've actually, I make a really good garlic butter ribeye steak with balsamic fried Brussels sprouts and then usually like a baked potato or something like that. Amazing.
Okay. I feel like Kyle Singler might cook. Kyle Singler might cook, like, organic stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he shops exclusively at Whole Foods.
At Whole Foods, right.
In, like, the section that really nobody else goes to.
Right. The kosher section.
Right. <exactly. laughs>
That's the section no one else goes to.
Yeah. I mean, I think some guys cook, but I've never really had anybody else on the team cook for me, but I'd be willing to try.
Well, Ennis kind of has to, right?
He has that cooking show.
Right.
Kind of, right? Yeah.
Right. And, like, with the, you know, he's very specific mm-hmm. to particular kinds of cuisine that he wants, and it's not very accessible to get in Oklahoma City.
That's true. So but at the same time, like, Ennis didn't start driving himself until this year.
That's hilarious.
So I wouldn't put it past him to not cook either.
So who didn't have their license? Ennis didn't?
Well, I think he had his license.
But he just
didn't drive himself.
Did Domas not have his license? Is that what it was?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. Because as long as Domas has been here that I've been paying attention, at least he's been driving. But, I mean, to me, it's so weird like that somebody wouldn't have their license. But that's just where I come from. Like, a lot of people that grew up in larger cities, I guess there wasn't as much reason to have a license with public transportation, but I don't know.
What was your parents' reaction when you told them that Stanford offered you, or that they found out that Stanford made an offer to you?
They were really excited, of course. Like,
did they make you go to Stanford? Were you considering other places? And they were like, you have to go to Stanford? Because that's what my parents would have done.
No, it wasn't like
Stanford, are you kidding me? You're going there.
I mean, it's always been school has always been, like, number one in my family. My whole life, my parents are, you know, both have their master's degrees and took school very seriously and pushed me. I was considering other places. Like, you know, I took an official visit to USC, too, and I took one to Harvard. Took an unofficial to Gonzaga. Like, I mean, I had...
I took one to Harvard... 2 second
you
silence.
You said it. I took one to Harvard.
2 second silence after Harvard, and then there's Gonzaga.
Listen, like I was there. The you know the more academic schools like Stanford and Harvard are obviously a different level academically, and it came down to those two, and it just ended up being like to me Harvard was a little far away. And
was Amaker the coach?
He was. Yeah, great guy.
I mean, they had good. So you could have played. You would have played with Lynn, I assume, right? Because you're about the same age.
No, he would have been. His senior year of college was my senior year of high school.
Got it.
I would have missed him by 1 year.
Got it.
Yeah.
He. I mean, there were some really good Harvard teams, like legitimately good.
Yeah, legitimately good. Yeah.
Like let me down in the NCAA tournament because I picked them to win NCAA tournament games.
Yeah, they were really good, man. Amaker's a great coach. Like, he did incredible things with them. Like he turned them into like a almost like a household name in college basketball there. And but you know it was hard to beat the Pac-12 and California weather. And I liked the guys that were also going there. And obviously, I mean, I think I made the right choice in the long run.
Best restaurant in Oklahoma City?
I'm just a huge like steak guy, so like mahogany is hard for me to beat.
Red
Prime is really good too.
Really good, yeah. You go with those over the ranch?
I've actually never been to the ranch. See,
that's your next move.
I know. I need to go to the ranch.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it's crazy good. But you guys all love mahogany.
Mahogany's great.
Everyone knows. I mean, mahogany was
so good.
How are you during the whole mahogany scandal last month?
The mahogany scandal.
You didn't follow that?
No, what happened?
You guys didn't follow that?
No, what happened?
That the owner of Mahogany said that.
Oh, that thing.
Yes.
Oh, that. What? Okay.
What's going on during the Mahogany scandal? That's what we're calling it, the Mahogany scandal.
I mean, all you can really say, like, that guy, that takes a lot of, man, if you want to call it, like, loyalty, like, I don't even know how to, describe it. I mean, again, it's his restaurant. I guess he can do whatever he wants with it, but, like, loyalty, I guess is all you could really call it.
There you go. Hashtag loyalty. There you go. Your locker is next to Ennis Canners. We talked about Ennis a little bit. Give me one good Ennis story.
One good Ennis story. Okay, here's something. Ennis doesn't think he has an accent.
Ennis doesn't think he has an
accent? No, he legitimately believes that he doesn't have an accent. We had gotten a huge argument with him about this.
He's so funny, man.
I was like,
he's
Ennis,
so funny.
You have an accent. He's like, no, man, I don't, man. I was like, Ennis, are you kidding me? And he you can ask him. He will legitimately take it to his grave. He does not have an accent.
That's awesome.
And I don't get
it. I mean, his English is perfect.
It's really
perfectly good. Yeah,
but you're not, nobody's going to talk to Ennis and go, oh, yeah, he's from America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody's going to think that.
His accent is not, thick or anything like
no,
that.
No, but
it's perfectly
there.
Understandable, but, like...
It's clearly there.
He's very clearly from Turkey.
Yeah, like, I'd probably even say that Alex Abrines has less of an accent than Ennis does.
I agree.
But you ask Ennis, and Ennis will probably say Alex has a thick accent. But Ennis will deny, fervently that he has an accent.
That's great.
I just don't get it. And I get in arguments all the time, too, about, how I have two dogs. And sometimes I'll come in and I have maybe some dog hair on my shirt or something like that. And he thinks it's just the nastiest thing ever. And I'm like, Ennis, do you not like dogs? He's like, no, I love dogs. I just won't touch them. It's like, Ennis, those two things don't match up. That doesn't go hand in hand. I love it, but I won't touch it.
He has some of my favorite quotes. Some of my favorite quotes ever.
He's always good for a quote.
He's okay. So you know how you know how you guys treat Ennis with the second unit, where it's just throw it into him,
yeah,
let him get a bucket, maybe you're having a bad offensive stretch, just give it to Ennis,
yeah,
let him back guy down and get a bucket.
For sure.
That's how I feel about when I don't really have a story idea.
Exactly.
And I'm like, all right, I need...
Just go talk to Ennis.
I need an extra note, I need an extra 120 words for this thing. Let me just go talk to Ennis, he'll say something, hilarious.
Yeah, he's... I don't want to say he doesn't have a filter. It's just
he doesn't. He doesn't have a filter.
Yeah, he just whatever it's comes great. Through his head is.
But
I'm
here's
just
the thing:
say
some
that.
Guys, some guys don't have a filter and they're pricks.
Right, but Ennis is just he's genuine,
like you.
I should have known that was coming.
Some guys don't have a filter, but they're incredibly nice guys, so they're not saying anything.
Ennis, yeah, because Ennis like
he's just
Ennis,
a sweet dude.
Ennis doesn't swear. Ennis is just like Ennis won't even say shut up. Like Ennis isn't an aggressive talker like that. But
right.
Whatever he thinks, he says. He's not afraid to be honest. He's blunt for sure.
My favorite conversation I've ever had with Ennis was about Yusuf Nurkic's father. You ever seen his father?
No.
We'll Google him after the show.
He's a terrifying human being, I'm guessing.
He's okay. Like you think Nurkic is big?
Yeah.
He dwarfs him.
Really?
He's over 7 feet and he's 400 pounds.
See, that's how I feel about Domas's dad. Like when I first saw Arvidas in person, I was like, he's a monster. Like Domas is a big
guy. Yeah, but you realize he moved
Yeah, he was.
Have you watched him play?
He was like a gazelle, man. He was crazy.
He was incredible.
It was insane.
He was unbelievable. I would have loved to see him play. Would have been awesome to see him play in his prime in the NBA. Because he didn't
come
back until his 30s.
Yeah, exactly.
And, he already had knee problems. And he's still, at 34, averaged, 16 and 10 one year.
Yeah.
And,
great. Incredible. But, he makes Domas look small.
Yeah.
And Domas is a big, obviously a really big guy. But his dad is. Have you talked to him? Have you heard his voice?
Arvidus, yeah.
He sounds like a bad guy in like a sci-fi movie or something like that. Like, just like this. Like, you could just throw him in like an animated movie as like the bad guy.
Yeah, well,
it'd be terrifying.
He would have been perfect. If he were born like Arvidus, mm-hmm. if he were born like 20 years later, mm-hmm. he would have been perfect for the modern game.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because he could like switch onto wings and like shoot threes.
Exactly.
Like he would have been like if Porzingis were bigger.
Exactly.
Like if Porzingis were wider.
Porzingis gained, you know, like
80 pounds, but maintained all of his lateral quickness.
It's the same thing.
Ability.
Yeah, for sure. He was ahead of his time, definitely. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Him and Hakeem are like two guys where I'm like, who's your favorite player growing up?
My favorite player growing up, KG was one of them, Scottie Pippen. Shaq too. I mean, that's the reason I'm 34. Shaq was my favorite player when I was really young.
Were you a Lakers fan?
I was just a basketball fan. I never really had Montana. We didn't, you know, there wasn't like a favorite team. There wasn't like a hometown team or anything. So I just liked watching the game. But I played center all the way through high school. So that's just what I knew. You kind of relate to players that are, you know, play the same position as you and who you want to be like. And that was Shaq. And then, as I've gotten older, it's almost like watching like Scottie Pippen stuff when he was playing, because I was so young when he was in his prime. Seeing that is like, again, an all new respect and like admiration for guys like that.
Did you you grew up in Montana?
Yeah.
You're the only person I know who grew up in Montana.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
We're selective about who we allow up there.
Yeah, only. Like from my sample size, 100% of people from Montana. I'll hold off on this one. I'll hold off on this one. What was that like growing up in such a – like you don't like big cities.
No, I mean – like, all right. So it's not that I don't like big cities. I just don't know if I could ever – I would never really choose to live in a big city. Like I love visiting places like New York, LA, things like that. But if I was given a choice of where I wanted to live, those wouldn't be near the top of my list. Definitely not. I would rather live somewhere smaller. Like honestly, I never thought it growing up that I wanted to live in Montana again. But that's like the dream for me is to end up back there, or at least somewhere in the Pacific Northwest.
So I want to talk about draft stock.
Okay.
Draft stuff.
Nice.
Missed up.
Mm-hmm. You missed up.
Stock. Yeah, I missed up. I missed up stuff in stock. It's a stumble. All right, so your stock was not generally thought of as first round going into the draft. You were 14, right, 2014?
Yeah.
Not generally thought of as first round. Took a deal where you agreed to go to the D-League. For those who don't know, I know you know.
Yeah.
But took a deal where you agreed to go to the D-League for 1 year, put off your rookie contract for an extra year, made a D-League salary for your first year, and then started your rookie contract a year late. It's 3 years later. How do you look back on that process?
I'm happy. I mean, you know, I don't like to look back on things and go like, what if, because this is the situation, like, this is where I'm at. Obviously, I'm in the NBA now, and I'm on a roster, and that's, of course, the dream. Like, there's so many people out there that aren't on rosters that would, you know, kill to be in the position I'm in, and I'm part of an amazing organization. And just the experiences that I've had over the last 3 years and the things that I've learned make it all worth it, make the decision. Like, if I could go back, I would make the same decision over and over again.
So I'm, like, kind of a CBA nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for the listeners who don't know, like, this is an unprecedented scenario. This is, I mean, guys get drafted and they get stashed in Europe or whatever it is. But this is the first time where a guy has, like, been drafted in the first round and then stashed in the D League. And I have a feeling we'll see it again.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that's never going to happen again. I think it's kind of – things are trending towards MLB style of stashing. You know what I mean? Like development. That's what it's all about.
So I'm wondering, when you first get that call – I assume it's from your agent.
Mm-hmm.
When you get that call – who was your agent then? I know you were
doing that. Mitchell Butler.
Right. So when you get that – when you get that that call from him.
Yeah.
And that scenario is initially proposed to you. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction? Because D-League, for also yeah. those who don't know, it's going to change under this new CBA. D-League yeah. guys are going to make more.
Exactly.
But when you're there, you're making five figures.
Yeah. It,
I'm sure you could be making more than that in, I mean, maybe in the long run it helps you economically, but you can mm-hmm. make more than that playing in Europe or something.
Oh, like absolutely. At first it was just me trying to wrap my head around it. I needed it, you know, explained to me, make sure I understood everything about it. Then I tried to think of it in terms of, like, what's best for me in the long run. And, you know, it was a relatively easy decision because it gave me a chance to, one, it's every kid's dream to be drafted in the first round, of course. Like, that's something that you dream about since you pick up a basketball. But then just to be a part of this organization, like, obviously there's some great clubs out there, but this is one of those ones that has a reputation of being different, doing things differently and being very successful and kind of fostering a good learning environment. And the way I thought about it was, if I have a chance to be a part of that and learn here, that I think it could be best for me in the long run and make me a better player. So once I settled on that, then it was a pretty easy decision.
When did you for sure know that they were going to take you?
Probably 10 seconds before it happened.
Oh, was that?
Yeah, it was like...
It wasn't like a promise before.
No, it was like a, well, this could happen. Just depending on how things fall into place during the draft, like who goes before you.
And it was already worked out if they take you.
Mm-hmm, that was the scenario.
And you like basically pre-agreed to that contract.
Yeah, and so it was understood that that was the route that I was going to take, but I didn't get the call that it was gonna happen until 10 seconds before. Like, I was a nervous wreck the entire first round, like the most nervous and anxious I've ever been in my life, because I had no idea. And I you know, it wasn't something that I was going into it like, okay, this is gonna happen for sure.
But who'd you watch the draft with?
A lot of people, man. It was originally supposed to just be me and some close friends and family at this like sports bar in my hometown, and then word got out that I'd be there to watch the draft. And it turned into this spectacle of, like, a few hundred people all jammed into this sports bar, which is great. And the support I've got, that's the thing about being from where I'm from, is Montana has a million people, and my hometown is 60,000. But everybody supports everybody from Montana. Like, regardless of what town what they're from, what team they play for, everybody wants you to do well, so... I get a lot of support from them.
You the only player from Montana?
In the NBA currently?
Yeah.
Who's
the best player from Montana ever?
Probably Larry Krystkowiak.
There you go.
Yeah, him. I mean, Phil Jackson was born there. So was Adam Morrison.
Phil Jackson was born there.
Adam Morrison was born there. I'm trying to think of any more. there's not a lot.
Yeah, there's
long story short, yeah.
You could have, like, a pickup game against the Alaskans.
Exactly.
Alaskans has some good guys, though.
Yeah, Carlos Boozer. Who else is
Chalmers from? Is from there?
Yeah, Mario Chalmers, that's right.
Trajan Langdon is from there?
Yeah, it's Alaska. I mean, it's... I think people are more surprised.
The head of analytics for the Bucks is from Alaska.
Oh, wow.
We're getting into the analytics,
I'd be willing to
guys.
Bet if I said I was from Alaska, people would be less surprised and less caught off guard than if I say I'm from Montana, judging from the reactions I've gotten my whole life.
Do you think Montana is the only state on the mainland that actually gets that reaction over Alaska?
Yeah, I think so.
What about like Idaho?
No, see, because then people look at it like, all right, there's like people have like heard of it, like they have an idea of Idaho in their head, like
right.
Boise.
Potatoes.
Yeah, they have
yeah,
this
Boise,
idea
true.
Of it
Sun
in
Valley.
Their head. Exactly. Like, okay, Idaho. Even Wyoming, like, because it's you got Wyoming basketball is and football
right.
is kind of like a little better known.
Right. Montana State made the tournament 2 years ago.
Yes,
3 years ago.
University of Montana did too, and they're solid. It's just something about Montana. Whenever you mention Montana, all people see is horses and cows and cowboys, like teepees. People
and,
have asked
and
me
terrible
if I rode
Twitter
horses
follows.
To
Terrible Twitter follows.
You're gaining like a million new enemies in this podcast right now.
The entire state of Montana.
They're coming for you.
Yeah, the entire state. All four people in Montana. All three electoral votes are coming for me.
See? Listen, and people think that I come at you for no reason, but here, this is it. People are starting to see the true Fred.
No, this is my
going at the innocent state of Montana.
It's three electoral votes. I'm stating, stating a fact.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That's all it is.
It's they did it. The stat is that there's one person per square mile in Montana. Like you could.
Is that actually
that's,
true?
That's what it equates out to be. Is roughly one person per square mile. It's the fourth largest state. But 49th in population.
What's 50th?
Wyoming.
Oh, there you go. How is it? You wrote something on your blog. When was it? I don't know. A few weeks ago. About like the mental state of going up and down from the D-League. And kind of like the wear it takes on you. Because you're around insanely faint. Like Russell Westbrook is... he's not just a great basketball player. Like, he is an A-list celebrity. Like,
My
mother knows nothing about basketball. And she is, like, he is, like, one of the five or six players.
Yeah, there's those players that transcend sports.
Right.
Yeah.
And he is...
He's one of them.
Incredibly famous. Mm-hmm. And you're around these insanely famous people. And you kind of wrote about how, like, you were at a team event and there were people who didn't know who you were.
Right.
What is that like?
It's tough some days. Obviously, like, everybody wants to be recognized and appreciated, but that's something I've struggled with, and I think a lot of people struggle with. And I think a problem that people in this profession and any profession really can have is that they care too much about what people think of them. You know what I mean? Like, they judge their worth off of how other people see them and how other people place worth on them and value on them. And I get caught up in that trap a lot of times. It's like, okay, like, oh, this person, this stranger didn't know my name at this thing. Then I go home and I can, sometimes that would, it could bother you. Like, okay, like why, like I wish they knew who I was. I wish they know who the other people are. But at the end of the day, like, what does that really matter? Like that doesn't change how I can value myself. You know what I mean? And I'm not perfect at it. Like, obviously, I still struggle with it. And I think anybody in this position would have days where that can happen because you're so in the public eye and people's opinions of you are so well known. It's unlike anything else. Like, you can just go on any social media and you can see exactly what X amount of people think about you right there.
Does it get frustrating going up and down from the D-League in that sense? Like, not even from a basketball, because it's not like you're – it's not like they're in Tulsa still. Like,
right.
It's not like the travel's annoying or maybe the basketball is not even annoying. And I know you
– Yeah.
I imagine you like those coaches because I know Mark's a really good dude and Trayvon's a really good dude and, like, that's a good coaching staff. But, like, is that – does that get frustrating? I mean, I know you appreciate the process.
Yeah.
But from a personal level, isn't that – is there some degree of that?
Well, they make it easier than it could be, for sure. Like you said, the travel. I mean, it's just right down the street. Like, the practice facility for the Blue is actually closer to my house than the Thunder practice facility, which makes it easier. And then all the guys down there are great, which, of course, makes it a lot more enjoyable. At the end of the day, like, obviously, the D-League isn't where anybody wants to be, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, that, nobody wants that to be their destination. You know, everyone from the coaches to the players, to the referees, they're using it as a stepping stool to get to the next level. So, obviously, I'd much rather be playing in games with the Thunder, but that's not happening. So, I'm grateful that I have a chance to play with the Blue and play with a really good team and a lot of great guys to help me get better. I think I could easily get a lot more frustrated by it, but what good would that do?
You know how confused I was when you got drafted in the D-League draft last year?
A lot of people were. So my mom called
me
freaking out. Like, people were freaking out. Like,
even I didn't know that rule.
Right. No, so I had been warned before that could happen. But So it didn't bother me. Like, I knew, like, that was a potential thing. But, like, yeah, people were, like, genuinely confused by it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that just means that Greensboro.
It was Greensboro, yeah.
Greensboro now has your rights.
Exactly.
If you were to get cut and then you wanted to sign with the D-League team.
I would have to go to
Greensboro,
yeah.
But actually, in effect, has
zero impact on me whatsoever.
At all. It's like just like a weird late-round risky pick that they made.
Exactly.
But I saw it. I was like, wait, I'm following it. Just to see what's going on, to, like, see the blue take, because I have to, like, put up a blog post on who the blue drafted in the D-League draft. And, yeah, I see that you got drafted by Greensboro. I was like, what the?
Like, what's going on?
He's under contract with the Thunder. Mm-hmm. How is that possible? So I had to read the CBA and then hit up my buddy who actually covers the D-League, the only person I know who covers the D-League.
He cleared it up for you?
Yes. You know Chris Reichert?
I don't.
He's like the D-League reporter.
The D-League reporter?
Yes. He's like the D-League newsbreaker and the D-League reporter. And like he's the one who breaks when like every time Reggie Williams signs with the Pelicans. Like it's always.
He's been busy.
Yeah. Reggie Williams just back and forth.
Back and forth, man.
So do you guys realize that Reggie Williams like just plays exactly like James Harden?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean. I could, I know
it's
exactly.
Unbelievable,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Reggie's so good, man. Like, Reggie deserves to be in an NBA uniform for sure. He's super talented. He'll find his place, obviously. Like, the times that he has gotten those 10 days, like, he's gotten in a few times and he's done well. So I think it's just a matter of time for him.
All right, I'll let you go because I know you got a game tonight.
Yeah.
We're recording this
and
song.
I dislike you.
Well, that too.
It's like my monthly allowance of Fred Katz.
Just know it's mutual. We don't have to talk for a month now. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Don't worry.
Feel free
be great.
To extend it.
Don't worry. That'll be great. So before we do go, because I know you got a game against the Sixers tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really talked about Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
And I know people care.
Yeah.
About Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
I asked for an Enes Kanter story.
Mm-hmm.
Russell's very closed off to us. He's very closed off to the public. Mm-hmm. He gives the portion of himself that he wants to give to the public.
For sure.
And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's his prerogative. But I want you to give a good Russell Westbrook story.
A good Russell Westbrook story.
Of any kind.
Of any kind. So here's one. I think a lot of people out there have this idea of who Russell Westbrook is as a human being based solely off of the personality they see in the 48 minutes that he's in front of the camera on the court. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if you were to ask a lot of people, they would describe him as kind of like coarse, aggressive, intimidating, things like, you know what I mean? Like, that's, I think, how a lot of people see him. But honestly, like, he's a really nice, genuine, down-to-earth guy. And ever since I've been here, he doesn't walk around here or talk to us or act to anybody else as a superstar. And like the story I'll give about him that I always think of and I always tell people when they ask what he's like is my birthday was in December. And so my best friend and my fiance threw a surprise party for me. And it was at the Dust Bowl, you know, the bowling alley.
Yeah,
under Fassler Hall. And so the whole team was there, everything like that. And afterwards, my fiance told me that the first person to get there was Russ. Like the very first person to show up. And he just sat because my best friend was waiting there, setting everything up. Russ showed up before everybody else, early, and just sat there and talked to my buddy. And then Russ was one of the last people to leave, even though he had like a movie showing right afterwards. He was one of the last people to leave. And that just kind of speaks to the type of person that he is. Like, he didn't have to be the first person to show up for this. Like, he could have rolled in fashionably late, done whatever, but.
So Russell is probably the most punctual person I've ever met.
I feel
like he's early to everything.
He takes it serious. Like, yeah.
He's early to everything.
Yeah.
Like, it's like I heard a story about his, I think it was his draft workout, draft interview.
Yeah.
he showed up like 45 minutes early.
Doesn't surprise me.
And he just waited there.
Doesn't surprise me.
Because he is early to everything.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good trait.
Yeah, sure.
In this line of work, there are a lot of people who are very late.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, that's like the Tom Coughlin rule, right? Mm-hmm. You have to show up 15 minutes earlier than whatever.
If you're on time, you're late.
Right.
And that's just kind of how it goes. That's how it was for us in college, too. One more Russell story.
Yeah, please.
It's not really a story. It's like we were in, I want to say, San Antonio last year, and it was during the playoffs. And me and my fiance was there. She was my girlfriend at the time. But we went to the mall, walking around, outdoor mall, see Russ in the distance with, you know, security. They're just walking through, and he's with his family. And we go up to say hi, and I go up to shake his hand, and he kind of pushes me aside and walks straight up to Haley. And this is before Haley moved in with me. So he really didn't know her all that well. I met her a couple times. Walks straight up to her, asks, like, how are you? Like, how is everything? Hugs her, talks to her like they had known each other for years. Like, just the type of guy he is.
Well, even nice to the... I don't know what Haley's doing with you.
She could do so much better. Yeah, trust me. Well, I ask myself the same question all the time. And I'm going to make sure she listens to this podcast so that she can hear this exact conversation right now.
Yes. Then you can be on record. You're literally on record.
Literally on record as saying that she's too good for me. Absolutely.
Is it... I know you're in the middle of it and you're on the team and you mm-hmm. have like other things to worry about. And I know Russell... hates talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know he is not putting on an act. Like, I know he hates at least talking about it. But does it hit you ever? Like, look at the season that I'm, like, getting to watch from this guy. Like, what he's doing right now and how historic it is.
It's incredible. Obviously, like, you know, and I understand why he doesn't like to talk about it. Like, he's just all about winning. That's what he wants to do. And I think, obviously, there's people out there who kind of attach this negative thing to what he's doing, almost for whatever reason. But, yeah, it's incredible. It's something that, obviously, is like a once-in-a-generation thing.
Not even.
Once-in-a-lifetime thing, really. Yeah, you're right. Once-in-a-lifetime
there are people who are 54 years old, and this has never happened in their lifetime.
That's incredible. Like, to be able to...
This has never happened in Billy Donovan's lifetime.
It's insane. Like, to be able to sit courtside and see this happening and see this, you know, one of the best players of all time play. Like, I think about it, and, you know, hopefully my kids are... They love basketball, and one day be able to tell them, like... You know, I was there that season. Like, I saw it happen and be able to tell them about it and to know that I was a part of it and to know that I knew him and I was a part of that team is amazing. And, like, if you ask him about it, obviously he'll talk it down all day or he just won't talk about it at all. Because at the end of the day, like, he's the type of guy, if he goes out there and he, you know, has 10 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, but we win and we keep winning, that's what matters to him. He wants to win. He's a competitor.
Well, I don't think he's ever going to have 10 points.
Well, that's the thing. He's too good for that.
He's too good for that. His worst line of the year is honestly probably the Golden State line the other game when he had 15, 8, and 7.
Which is still like anybody else would walk away from that game going like...
15-8-7. It's like a Draymond line.
Nice, exactly.
It's like a Draymond line with a little more scoring.
Yeah. I never thought that triple doubles would get kind of
normalized.
Yeah. Like, it happens, and I just go,
yeah.
He got it. Okay, cool.
It's kind of a disappointment when he doesn't. And I realize how ridiculous that is.
How
and
that's ridiculous.
Like, because it's so. Like, I was sitting there. He had some pass. It was in the Brooklyn game. Mm-hmm. He had some pass. Where I was just like...
It wasn't that full... Was it the full
court? Well, the Toronto one
was
the best.
That was the Toronto one.
That was incredible. But the moment where I had this, he had some play where he blew by somebody and made some crazy pass.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, well, he does it, you know, 5 times a game or whatever. And,
which is unfair.
Right. And I was sitting there courtside, and you've never seen me play pickup, but I've been compared to, like, old Reggie Evans if Reggie Evans were a terrible rebounder. And so, It doesn't look too good.
Right.
And I'm sitting there, and I actually have a large box of popcorn that I've mm-hmm. gotten from the media room. And popcorn, there's no way that any human being can eat popcorn in an attractive manner. Because you either eat handfuls of it.
Or one at a time.
Or one at a time, and you look like a serial killer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you look like an actual... You look either insane or you look dangerous.
Exactly.
Why is that person eating popcorn one at a time? Or you're just eating handfuls.
You look like just a mess.
Right.
Just
all over your shirt. So, obviously, I go the handful route. And,
typical for you.
Right. Yeah, of course. And so, you can't maintain this figure without handfuls of popcorn. and so I'm digging into it, and I've got popcorn, like, on my chest. I'm wearing a black sweater, too, so, like, all the
you can see it from my old
popcorn dust shows. And I'm sitting there, I'm eating, I'm, like, lounging back. And Russell makes his play, and I was like, man, I am so physically insufficient.
He makes you feel bad about yourself.
Makes me feel terrible.
You look down at yourself, you just got popcorn all over you. You're slouched in this chair.
What have I done? I was like, I was a good baseball player when I was 16 years old. What happened? What happened to me?
Yeah, he does. But the thing is, he does that to the best athletes in the world, man.
Yeah. No, it's
like,
true.
When you got...
Like that dunk on Cousins? That was a good one.
What was the one who were we playing with the left?
Capella.
Yeah, Houston, that's right. That or those ones, like, he does things that even that make even guys like us go, just scratch our heads, like, how did he do it?
Yep, that is true. This is normally the time in the podcast when I ask my guests if they have anything to plug.
Anything to plug?
Yeah, but I don't know if you have anything to plug.
The only thing I would plug is just everybody to hop on the I Hate Fred Katz bandwagon. Hop on the train. Feel free to tweet at him. Feel free to do whatever. Join me. Maybe we can hopefully
get his account suspended. Except for Kara.
Is that the lady?
That's the lady, yeah.
That one came out of nowhere. No. Said, for the listeners, a lady on Twitter just decided to tell Fred, unprovoked.
Yeah.
Tell Fred.
Well, not unprovoked. Provoked by you.
I hadn't said anything, though. I hadn't led up to that. I just got on Twitter one day, checked my mentions, and in it said, Fred Katz is the worst human being on the planet.
But you were tagged in it.
I was tagged in it. It was like she was, you know, like, hey, Josh, look at this. Like, watch me get him. And I laughed. I was like, this came – I didn't even say anything. And people are already – you know, people are picking up on the type of person you are.
All right. Well, you can remember if you do want to keep listening. You can – remember, I'm on weekdays, Monday through Friday. This is, I guess, going to be it's Wednesday when we're recording this, but mm-hmm. I'm going to run this one on Friday. So I'm sure you'll see tweets from Josh leading into this. If you do follow, if you have the unfortunate pleasure of following Josh on Twitter, you can go onto iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. And find me on Twitter @FredKatz. Please find me on Twitter @FredKatz. And log on to normantranscript.com for your Thunder needs. And you can check out my blog there, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site, or normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road if you're one of those people who goes to URLs with slashes. Josh is trying to chime in.
Oh, you know, I did. I have one plug.
Yes, plug.
If you do read Fred's blog, then obviously, like, if you want to, you know, increase your blogging, if you want to see more, a better blog, you know, it doesn't take much, but a better blog, I have one, jhustis.wordpress.com. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. That's my only plug.
That's a hell of a plug.
Thank you. I'm new at plugs.
There you go.
Usually I don't have to plug myself. It just kind of happens.
I could make such a great joke right now, but I don't think
do
it's appropriate.
It's not.
Can we edit that? It's a PG-13 podcast. And we're going to end on that note. Off of the weekend, back on Monday. Houston is on Sunday, so I'll be wrapping up with the podcast there in Houston and posting that Monday morning as usual. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.